woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, North Bay Inspection Jackson, I'm Tom Howell.
We have... Who do we have on the board? We have Mr. Everybody knows who you are by now.
Mr.
Just by your voice. Right? Greg Pappas on the board. While everybody was guessing.
Mr.
Yeah. So how are you?
We're ready to rock.
Ready to rock. Were you enough rain yesterday?
Not really.
You need a little more?
Yeah. The beans need it.
The beans got a bunch of... If you were underneath that cloud yesterday downtown, you got enough for a while. Actually, though, stuff dries out pretty quick, doesn't it? I mean, if you don't have rain for like a week, it starts to dry already, doesn't it?
Well, it's plant food.
How much we have Kevin, how are you?
Good morning.
Good morning. We're just doing a quick was that rain enough of the whole area, enough to where it would move prices positively, or was it just localized around a few counties?
Beans are up a little bit from yesterday.
All right, so they're up, not down.
A little bit.
Yeah. So it was a pretty general rain. It looked like it was mostly a band from here to like the Wisconsin border, not a whole lot south.
Right. Right.
So what is it? Remember the story with the where it rains on LaSalle Street? You know, the price of grain goes down, even though at LaSalle Street you don't grow anything there.
Right.
Remember the one guy? Well, he was probably before my time. Where they find him because he walked in with an umbrella and a raincoat. Maybe somebody threw water all over him. They find the dude. Anyway, Kevin, how are you?
I'm doing all right. So I cruise the highways and byways of rural southwest Michigan.
Well, you know, you're in the heart of the heartland or something, or the something of the something land.
Fruit growing, cherries, strawberries, blueberries, peaches.
Apples?
Apples in the fall, yes. Apples picking in the fall.
We'll have to go down to, we go to the place in Indiana and get the hundreds of pounds for my brother's apple pressing for his juice, right, Greg? He makes the mead and then he makes the other stuff. What else does he make? He makes the hard cider?
He makes a hard cider, huh?
Well, then he takes all the other stuff that's left over and what do they do? Greg, you know what this. You pour sugar in, then you make actually hard liquor out of that or something?
He's got the fermenting for these, not spirits, but like mead and then he gives it to his friend who does the distilling.
Yeah, you can actually buy a little still now, Kevin. They're kind of neat. They sit on the counter, and what do they do? Like about a
little dangerous.
A gallon an hour. And then, no, these are the new ones. The new ones you actually just put
in. Can I get one that, you set in the front of the house in the garden, you know, like a little bauble for the yard?
You could. Although the machine, the thing you use to squeeze the apples is a real contraption. My nephew, who works for the metalworking company, made the thing, and it's really something. Two big, huge bolts that you turn and you twist and to get the... I mean, it's a big deal to squeeze apples. It's a big deal to do anything. I mean, what the heck? Do it right. It's just like the economy, Kevin. Here's a ad on CNBC here this morning. Is this you? How to Build Supply Chain Resiliency Through a Holistic View and Data-Led Recommendations.
Wow, that sounds like an incredible load of crap.
Well, yeah, it's a paid advertisement here for somebody.
You know, do you remember, oh my goodness, it's probably been 15 years or more when, maybe 20, when they used to give out these buzzword bingo cards in the in meetings. That was a hot thing to do for a while. And every time someone threw out some jargon, you'd mark it off, and when you got bingo, you'd shout it out in the meeting. That sounds like three in the first sentence.
Well, one of my buddies was saying, hey, how come you don't do a PTI commercial with AI? And I go, I can't do that. I'd be the AI manager or something.
I could do that for you.
No, Greg could do it. He could be, if we're going to have an AI guy, it would be Greg.
It's fun.
You could say you were AI. What if we get one of those
new...
video. We buy one of those Microsoft computers that has AI in it. Are we automatically AI?
Automatically.
Even if we just use it to get, like, email or something?
It's science.
So our email would be AI because it's on an AI machine.
I think radio could do that.
It's not AI until you say, hey, AI, respond to this crap. I don't have time for it.
Well, I know the people were in the office here for a while. They had a, what was it, Siri? That was creepy.
Well, and you can do the same thing. You can ask Google to do things for you. But, yeah, Siri's still out there, and it is creepy. And you got, of course, Amazon, Alexa. What do you say? Those are things I want no part of, though.
Well, she walks in and says, hey, Siri, how about open up my computer for me? I'm like, is that tough to do yourself? But I never said anything. I just sitting there listening, you know, minding my own business.
You know, when you guys say this on the radio, everybody's devices light up.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, you can't really do
that.
Yeah,
we should do that. We should do that at least once a show. Go, hey, Siri.
Yeah, you did it again.
I thought it was voice actually.
The Amazon one is also is always listening. So it's those words. Always listening for those.
Did you see the NCIS episode where somebody busted in and killed somebody, right? And they had no evidence. So finally, McGee, the computer geek guy, who's been on the show the longest, I think, figured out they had one of them was open. It was either Siri or the other one, and they were able, because the thing was on, they were able to get all the evidence off that thing for the guy who killed the lady. That was weird. Just saying.
So, hey Siri, I'm going to kill this lady?
the thing was just running in the background, and they tapped into it.
So if someone attacks you and you have an iPhone, the thing to start doing is say, hey Siri, listen to this. You may not live, but at least you'll have evidence left behind.
Yeah, hey, so...
Did I light up your Siri again, Greg?
Guys can't do that.
Greg can shut off his Siri. I got these new cameras for the back of the house, right? One in the alley and one in the gangway. Now, does anybody even know what a gangway is?
I do.
You do, because you're...
Especially reserved for gangs.
Yeah, especially reserved for gangs. Supposedly, if you want, the thing will learn who people are. So, like, if I go in and out, it won't buzz you for that because they know it knows who I am. That's even creepier.
Mm-hmm.
It did have some guy, some loser.
Well, and Tom, that's, you know, and when Carl talks about artificial intelligence isn't really intelligence, that's what AI does, is that kind of thing. But that's, you know, that's just the ability to do rote learning. That's not really, logical processing or anything like that. It's and that's sort of the state of the art with artificial intelligence. Anything that you could program it to do, if you were either so inclined, or if it would take you a lot of time, you can just have the AI do it. It's pretty basic stuff. But, you know, as an example, it gets used a lot for cybersecurity to find vulnerabilities. Well, you know, if I were sitting there trying to penetrate a network all by myself, it would take me a really, really long time to try every possible exploit. But AI is just a computer. It can try, you know, it can do what the hackers do. It can just be programmed to try and do all kinds of exploits, and then, you know, it'll just run them, you know, and 5 minutes later you have your results.
Kevin, when I was on a, boy, talk about ancient history. When I was on the board of the SIBO, which was 92 to 98, so we're talking a long time ago, my last year was almost like F Troop, where they said anybody on the board want to be on our, we want a board member on our double secret computer like hacking committee. I don't know if it's possible at a table, but everybody backed up, and I was the only one left, right? remember the stories in the old, like, F Troop or something, where they asked for a volunteer?
Yeah, step forward, and then the people who don't want to volunteer step backwards.
Yeah, step backwards, one guy's there. Yeah. So I'm on this.
Stu just did that, too.
Yeah, well, yeah, and then I did it. So I'm on this committee with, like, these four guys, and of course, I know nothing. I mean, literally nothing. But I tell you what,
you went full Sergeant Schultz on it, huh?
Well, but you know what? I learned so damn much from these guys. But this is 98, maybe 97. And a lot of the hacking at the time came out of Sweden. And what people would do, the CBOE, you know, obviously it was a massive organization. They would get a serious hack three, four, five times a week. And when somebody come in and they would just show up. That's a bad way of saying it, but essentially they would make it to your system, see how far they would get, try a bunch of stuff, try a bunch of different, you know, whatever code words or whatever. They'd work their way up a little bit, and then finally, if it got too tough, they'd say the hell with it, and they'd move on to someplace else. And and that's why I don't know how it is now, but when the CBOE decided to give out quotes from their website, they were terrified that if they gave the quotes out themselves, that somebody would be able to walk up the chain through the quotes. So they actually bought the quotes from an outside vendor that they had sold them to. They bought them back from them and used the vendor to put the quotes out. But at the time, you know, again, they were from Sweden, well, most of the people, some were from Finland. Has it advanced in terms of what you're trying to accomplish, Kevin? You just get someplace and you try and see if there's a hole to get in. Is it the same principle? It's just gotten better, or is it the same sort of principle? You get there and just search for ways to pile in, or how does it work?
Well, yeah. So first of all, you want to get into the network, and so the first lines of defense are to keep people out of the network, to not have open ports on anything. Now, that would be really easy if you didn't want certain people to get into your network who have legitimate reason to connect to you or to drop files to you or to just get into your portal and do things. It's like, you know, if you're an online trader and you want to get into PTI Direct.
Right.
So otherwise you could just lock out the world and you'd be fine. So that's problem number one. But once they get in, then there are it's what can you do once you're in, and that has, you know, there are logical things that network engineers will do, like create different subnets and who has permission to cross into a subnetwork on your network, and then who has access to databases and what kinds of access are prevented. And so, you know, that's the thing, is it's multi-layered, and you know, you have to just, you know, you're fighting all the way through, and there's even software exploits. So you may have a website up and running. You have to make sure that your website, that your coding is solid, such that you're not going to have software related exploits that will allow people to punch through.
Was I went to a I toured a ethanol facility, which essentially is, for lack of a better term, is a massive still, right? And those guys, you could only access any. You could, for two big huge screens, these two big dudes from Wisconsin are sitting there with their Packer hats on, right? There had to be, I don't know how many thousand, things like you turn your hose on, what you call them, a nozzle. There had to be how many thousand of those things. They were all automatic. You could work every single one from the computer terminal. And they had nothing from the outside. They said if you wanted to, you couldn't do anything from home. Nobody could get into the system. You had to sit in those two seats to run anything. And they said they never figured they were going to have a problem ever, because how could you get in? there was no access except from those two spots. Now, why don't more people?
If you hire a company to do a penetration test, and you include in their social engineering, which is another way that people get in, is they just fool people. They fool your employees, with phishing emails and the like. And they will very confidently tell you that, the first question I asked, well, what do you need for the social engineering? Do you need email addresses or anything like that to try and contact people? They said, no, we don't need any of that. We can get that all off of social media and other sources. And don't worry, we'll be in your network by this afternoon.
Really?
I think that's what's going on.
They'll tell you that very confidently, and then they'll come back and tell you what you have to do to lock down whatever exploit they use to get in there. But they're very confident that they'll be in there. Once they're in there, it's where can you go? What can you accomplish in there? So are your second and third level layers all of security all defined properly and managed? But it's spy versus spy. The white spy does something, then the black spy does something, then the white spy does something back, and they keep going until one blows the other up.
Well, the reason for this topic, other than just being generally of interest, is it's the big story this morning, and Greg, I don't know if you were on this, is
the auto dealer.
Yeah, the auto dealer network has been hacked in, so I guess
it's CDK. They're actually located in Hoffman Estates.
Now, can you buy a car
today?
Private.
Half the dealers around are pretty much struggling with their back-end systems.
And they're saying that they won't be able to do their accounting at the end of the month.
Possibly.
So evidently all these dealers are
but they're supposedly
system,
from Kevin. Eastern Europe.
Yeah, I forgot to mention that, is that in those days the hackers were from Sweden, now they're all from like Eastern Europe. But one question I have, and I probably should have been quizzing Carl yesterday, but Kevin, how the hell does somebody with half-ass connection in the woods of Eastern Europe, how do you have the power to do this stuff, or does it not take any power?
But what makes you think, first of all, what makes you think they have a half-ass connection? There's high-speed internet. There's high-speed internet everywhere, including satellite.
All right, so you're saying if I'm in eastern Poland someplace out in the woods in a small town, somehow I have a really good connection, I guess.
You probably still have a very good connection. So, so that's
North
number
Koreans,
one.
North Koreans, the Russians?
Number two, one of the things that is very common, have you ever heard of a bot or a bot network?
I've heard of it from you.
Yeah, from me. So what that means is if your computer is botted, it means you've been compromised. But all they did was plant software on your computer that would allow the hacker to, at any point in time, say, hey, Tom's computer, I want you to do this. And you can go do that. Now, a lot of these people build networks of bots like that. So they will have... they may over time have hundreds and hundreds of thousands of them, and so they have a central command and control, and they can fire up all the bots and say, okay, I want you to start doing different penetration tests at PTI.com or PTIsecurities.com, and so now you have multiples, and they're all over the world, so they may have good connections even if yours isn't stellar. The most common thing to do with a botnet, but not the only thing to do, is a denial of service attack, which just means tell them all to just go bombard you and to go www.ptisecurities.com over and over and over again, and you have hundreds of thousands of people coming at your website doing that all at the same time, and your customers can't get through.
That would not be good.
That would not be good.
What's
so,
up?
And that, the, didn't and, you say and there are ways to fend. There are ways to fend those off with your security system, and also things that you can push off of your network, layers that you can push off of your network. And if you use content delivery network services and things like that, then you can have those fended off for you.
Does any of these people ever get caught?
Sure.
How do you catch somebody in Eastern Europe?
Well, you can't do anything about it. You might know who it is, but you can't arrest him.
Oh, all right. Well, didn't you give me a site once that looks at your site and see if anybody's else is in there except you or something like that.
Well, there is software. It's old now. It was something I saw on a 60 Minutes report, actually, that had them. It could go in and it could see who else is on there, and you know, a lot of people are, because a lot of people want to track behavior. I mean, they're I don't want to say legitimate, but they're not nefarious. They just, you know, they're just gathering information.
Interesting. What this stuff, it really takes a drain out of a lot of people's budget, doesn't it? I mean, just to fight all this stuff off constantly?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Sometimes I wonder if all the stuff where people have to access it from the outside is really all that necessary. I mean, how many places could have a system was only in the building if they got their ass into work? I mean, do you really have to be able to access stuff from home? I mean, I guess in most cases, yeah.
Yeah, but. So that does raise the question is, okay, how much of that do you need? Because, yeah, if people are going to access from home, then that is another entry into your network that has to be secured. And you usually have an encrypted VPN for that. There are ways to do it. I would get less alarmed about that, honestly, than I would about some of the other things. Now, some of this is behavioral, too. If people are going to access your network from home, workers from home, then you want them disconnected when they're not working. And you want them, you know, you go to bed, as an example. If you want to do that, then you're going to shut down your computer, or at least you're going to take it off of the Wi-Fi, because I never worried, you know, I worried a lot less. At least I could monitor what people were doing on the network. It's what people get when they're off the network that would that made me nervous, because now, you know, you've got a lot of people running unsecured on their home networks. You get people who travel, they go on hotel networks, which are notoriously compromised. And once you start doing that, then now you're talking problems. Now you're talking things, because as soon as they bring that laptop back in and they plug it in onto the network, then all of a sudden whatever they got off network is now on your network.
Why, I guess a question for the both of you guys, and then we'll go to break. Why are people, I mean, I've never used the Wi-Fi in my life. And the reason why is my buddy Dr. J was in, not the basketball Dr. J, John Nigerian, he's been on the show with us. He was in, you know, his usual first class seat, perched up in one of the airlines, and he's sitting next to this guy who evidently was a computer expert of, you know, this is, you know, 10, 12 years ago. And John's sitting there, he's starting to fire up his computer, and the guy says to him, "Hey, you want me to tell you your password?" John goes, what are you talking about? And he goes, "It's the Wi-Fi system. I get into the Wi-Fi system. I'm really good at this stuff. See that lady over there? She just kicked on. Here's her password."
That's funny.
What the bleep? And
you know, there's a real common exploit too that you may have. You may think you're connecting to the Wi-Fi, like at a coffee shop, and you're really connecting to the guy over in the corner's computer who is intercepting everything, and then will redirect your messages, redirect your traffic back out over the internet, so that you don't notice that you're not, you know, that you're not connected the way you think you are. But meanwhile, is sucking down everything that's on your computer.
Oh, that's lovely.
Big thing, yeah, in restaurants,
there's
too.
There's all kinds of wonderful exploits out there.
Greg says it happens in restaurants a lot,
big,
too.
Big thing in restaurants, because of the wireless networks and the credit cards sometimes have to go through, depending on how you set up. But it's ripe for theft.
Especially. Oh, yeah.
Well, I know at PTI we have all these, everybody always tries to sell us, you know, a new network in here. And all the networks now, evidently, even business networks and offices, they push the Wi-Fi. So this guy is in here from AT&T, and he goes, "Well, you know, this will all be on Wi-Fi." I go, "How many times do I have to tell you? We want nothing on Wi-Fi. It's a securities firm. We want nothing on Wi-Fi. We don't want any Wi-Fi. We don't want it in the place. Oh, he looks at me like I'm a total Luddite. Why would we want why would we want our stuff on Wi-Fi? If you know, if you're not hardwired in, why would we want anybody to get into it? I mean, I have no idea why.
Yeah, you know, I use Wi-Fi a lot at home, but I keep it as secured as I can.
Well, SP Futures down 3, NASDAQ Futures up 19. We'll come back. We'll talk about something a lot more scintillating, although this is somewhat important, especially if you're a car dealer. It's not a good week for you. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
It is not a good week for a car dealer.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell, Greg Pappas on the board. SP Futures down 4, NASDAQ Futures up 10. Big mover this morning. Sort of interesting. Actually have a position in here. Federal Express up $35, which is 14%. Even though their revenue is down year over year, and so are their earnings. They claim they're making progress in their cost cutting. That's virtually double the straddle. The straddle is like $18. We've seen more and more of this where every, and not every stack, but pretty big companies now. I'm talking Accenture, I'm talking Oracle, Federal Express. They're in their earnings now. They're up 15-20%, and just some, I'm not going to say the numbers wouldn't justify it. Oracle is down, missed on both top and bottom line, and they're up like 20%. I mean, it's really incredible how they are starting all to get this new age valuation, and everybody's convinced. All these guys, they believe whatever comes out on the, and the, and we are revaluing stocks to the upside here almost one at a time. And it's not, it is real unusual for the market to price the straddle, which is the call and the put, which is the move on you expect the day on earnings. It's pretty unusual for those guys, for the market, those guys, the market to be wrong, you know, by 100%. It's got to be, what, 7 of the last 10 earnings, Greg? I mean, it's incredible. I've never seen anything like this. I mean, most of the time, if you go along the straddle, every time there's an earnings, you might break even. You probably lose a little bit because it's really hard for a retail person to short the straddle. Last 18 months, I don't think it's ever been in all my years in the business. I bet you'd have made money by being long. Well, we're going to quiz Russell with that because he actually looks at that kind of stuff in the second hour. But I find it incredible because we're talking, IBM was 2 times the straddle last time. I mean, it's pretty crazy stuff. Where Dow futures are down 88, individual stocks in the Dow. I got Apple up $1.75, Home Depot up $1.68. Home Depot got whacked yesterday pretty good. J.P. Morgan's down 67 cents. So I don't see where the big down drop is here in the Dow, but the futures are down 87. Over in Europe, DAX up 8. DAX got whacked pretty good yesterday. FTSE down 4, call that flat. CAC around down 48.6%. They were down heavy when the political problems hit, then they kind of made most of that back, and now they're down again today, so I'm not sure they know where they're going over there. Asia, Nikkei up 493, that's 1.2%. Hang Seng up 17, 18,089, staying above that 18,000 number. Shanghai trying to get back to 3,000, up 22, 2972, still can't do it. Yesterday, U.S., again, mixed bag. Dow's down 299, S&P up 21, NASDAQ bounced back most of what it lost the day before, up 220 by the dip. Well, how many times have we seen that? Bonds, up 4 basis points, 4.28. The Bund up 3 basis points, 2.43. Japan up 3, well over 1% at 103. I won't say well over, I guess I just did. A little bit over 103. Oil up 54 cents, 81.37, kind of in the high part of the range here. Brent up 47 cents, 85.48. Natural gas down 6 cents, 267. RBOB up a penny, 252. We've got gold down 13 bucks, 23.17. Is it, I'm going to say it's the bottom end of this range, like 23.10 to 23.60. Silver down 2 cents, 28.84. Copper down 2 cents, 4.34. We've got the euro is 106.82, so the dollar is a little stronger. It's probably one of the reasons why the gold is down a little bit. A British pound as well, under 127 at 126.47. So the dollar is a little stronger. Crypto, matter of fact, the dollar is really kicking ass on the yen. That's we should probably start reporting on that one tomorrow. Bitcoin down 559, 61,374. Greg, a lot of stuff there. What do you got for us, traffic weather? Yeah. So does anybody still trade the dollar yen?
I think so.
Is that still a contract?
I think so. Big time, yeah. 6:38 here in Chicago, 74 degrees now, scattered thunderstorms today, high of 81. We also have a beach hazard warning, 3 to 6 foot waves, so be careful. Stay out of the water if you're, or just stay out of the water, yeah. That's Lake County, Cook County, and then in Indiana, Lake County and Porter County. Phoenix 84 now, mostly cloudy and hot today with a high of 111. Traffic inbound Kennedy from Montrose, 19 minutes. Edens from Lake Cook, 45 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf, 65 minutes. The Ryan from 95th, 20 minutes. In 294, the Ryan is 32 minutes. MLB, Diamondbacks win at home against the Twins. White Sox lose to the Dodgers, and the Cubs lose in San Francisco. That's all I got, Chief.
Out of all the games that I don't want to go to see the Sox, I'm thinking last night we should have gone because Ohtani was there.
Yeah.
I've not seen him play.
Ridiculous. I think he had like a nine that extended his RBI streak to 9 or 10.
We let off the game at a home run, and he got another hit later. So
yeah, they were flashing stats that his performance, I think, was as good as what they were in the 50s. Like he could be on the 50s team with Campanella and Sandy Koufax.
Well, yeah, he was, but he's hitting over 300. Who is now? Very few people.
He's probably the best player.
When can he pitch
maybe
again?
Judge. I don't know.
Not pitching this year.
But I mean, he's just DH and he's not even playing outfield. I mean, but obviously he can throw a little bit. I'm thinking maybe not.
Yeah, they don't want to stress his arm at this point.
No, I don't imagine. See,
so they're not going to do it with the outfield either.
All right. Well, there you have it. So Kevin, what? The makeup of, I don't get a chance to talk to you about the World Series yet, the College World Series, that is. And, boy, the guys on ESPN, all they were doing was talking about recruiting and the portal. And we're down to what? Two conferences that have baseball teams, right? Where exactly are, where's like?
Only in the World Series. Every other conference has baseball teams. They just don't, they aren't competitive. Now, I'm sure, you know, it was an odd year because there is no more Pac-12, but this was the last year of the Pac-12. They have some, you know, rather legendary baseball programs in Stanford, Oregon, Southern California, even Cal. So they put a lot of players into MLB, and they've been their own. They have their own success stories and championships notched. So, you know, they're going to disperse a little bit. It will be interesting to see what a team like Southern Cal does in the Big Ten, because you know, it's always been hard. You know, there have been some really good teams out of Northern conferences, but not many, and they generally don't sustain it. It's, you know, because it's really hard to be a Northern team in college baseball. You're going to play your first 20 games on the road.
Yeah, and well, Dan went down. My brother went down to A&M.
Anyway, what I'm getting at is Southern California. They can actually play conference home games in April, and not have to worry about it, or even in March.
Does every Big Ten team have a team?
Whereas Michigan and Wisconsin can't.
Does every Big Ten school have a team?
Well, I'd have to look, but you know, does Northwestern have a team? I'm not aware. I've never heard anything about Northwestern baseball. So it's possible that they all don't, that not everyone has a team.
I mean, they don't. They certainly don't all have hockey teams. They surely don't have hockey teams. All have hockey teams. I don't think they all have soccer teams.
Well, they only have five Big Ten schools plus Notre Dame, so it's a six-team conference.
Yeah.
For hockey.
Anyway, you wonder as the money shifts around, and for those that kind of aren't aware, I mean, it's fascinating because these are all economic stories. Whenever you change the rules or change something, all of a sudden everything starts to shift. You can't, with the Asian philosopher that said no man can do just one thing, you know, you end up doing more. You kind of wonder, Kevin, that the deal has been, as you talked about the other day when you were on with John, is you would draft people out of high school if they decide they don't want to go in with you. I don't know, do you get a pick back or not? I'm not sure about that, but they essentially lose the pick. So if I'm drafted out of high school and I say I don't want to go with you guys, I'm going to go to Notre Dame or wherever, I go there, I cannot be drafted until I'm a junior, unless I bail out and go to junior college, in which case if I graduate after 2 years, then I can be drafted. So it's a sneaky way to get out early if I'm that good. But I'm not saying I was going to be that good. So after junior year, I now get out. But now we're talking about colleges are paying people, allegedly, allowing them to be paid by third parties or however it's shaken out at the particular place. Now, normally, baseball would be paying people in their minor leagues, in AAA, AAA. So now the colleges are essentially doing that mm-hmm. for them. Kevin, do you see any issue with that going forward, that maybe it changes to where you retain the draft rights and then that you end up having to pay the college some of the money to coach the kid? And to me, that's how it would seem like it would want to play.
When's your next collective bargaining agreement, and who's gonna be at the table?
Well, who decides?
I am sure that the owners would love to scale back some of their minor league operations.
But they're gonna have to, if they want to maintain the guy, they must have to pay him while he's there.
Well, so that's what they'd have to do is they'd have to have some kind of arrangement similar to college hockey where you retain your rights. So the question gets to be what can they do, or are they just going to count on some schools to at least have the equivalent of a minor league salary, which isn't much? I mean, right now, if they really want someone to skip college, they pay up a big upfront bonus for it.
Right. Wasn't that the issue with the general manager of the Cubs before the guy who won the World Series?
Before Theo Epstein, they had Jim Hendry.
Yeah, and Jim Hendry was, that's how they sort of screwed him, in the sense that that was his big shtick at Minnesota, is that he would get kids out of high school and he would pay them enough to not go to college, and that's why he had a really good farm system. And the Cubs essentially hired him to do the same thing and then wouldn't give him the money, I think, was the deal, wasn't that it? And he was always very frustrated.
That would be a very Cubs and Tribune Company thing to do from those days. Yeah.
So anyway, it just seems like I'd love to read a newspaper from 10 years out, not just to find out where stocks are, as to how this all plays out, Kevin, because the major league teams, they hire the coaches for AA. They're not going to pay, Greg Pappas a bunch of money to go play in God knows where, Peoria or someplace, or South Bend, and not control the coaching. So if you start retaining rights to kids, I wonder if they have anything to say with the coaches at the colleges that the hockey players go to, or whether they contribute to like an assistant coach that they want there or something. It would seem like that would be, they'd have an interest in doing that, wouldn't they, Kevin?
You would think. I do think the drafted college hockey players are concentrated in a small number of programs, and most of those programs have very accomplished coaches. So maybe they don't feel the need.
Well, how many guys on the Notre Dame team?
They probably shouldn't feel the need at Michigan or even Ohio State at this point is very good. Penn State, Michigan State. Wisconsin's been down a little bit. That would be interesting to see. But, yeah, it's...
How many guys on the Notre Dame team were already drafted? Do you have any idea?
I don't know, 8, 10, something like
that. Yeah, it was like 8 or 10. It was a lot.
You know, the Blackhawks had one of them, and Slaggart, you know, immediately signed with them at the end. His father is an assistant coach there.
Yeah, he played a couple of games when the Hawks were still playing, as soon as the Notre Dame season ended.
Yeah.
And he was going back and forth to school and playing for the Hawks, right?
Yep, yep.
It's an interesting world. You just wonder how it's all going to play out.
By the way, the Big Ten had 9 baseball teams this year. So Illinois, Nebraska, Indiana, Iowa, Michigan, Purdue, Penn State, Ohio State, and Minnesota.
So no Rutgers, no Maryland.
No, and Rutgers historically has had baseball. But, yeah, I don't see them in here. See them on the Big Ten's website.
Is the Big Ten or these big conferences? There are only a few of them left. Do they allow you to drop down in class for a certain sport? In other words, if Indiana didn't want to have some big ass soccer program, could their soccer team play with Butler and those guys?
No, Butler's in the Big East, so that's not exactly dropping down. You'd be more in the Mid-America.
Okay, Mid-America.
Like that. I only think you can do it if the conference doesn't offer the sport.
Okay.
So, as an example, up until a few years ago, they didn't have hockey. The Big Ten didn't get hockey until Penn State decided to have a hockey program.
Well, you need eight teams or six?
You need six to get an automatic berth in the NCAA.
So they only had 7 or 5, and then they grabbed Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Because Wisconsin's been a player forever, and so has Michigan State. I mean, they were teams when we were there, and so was Michigan. So they've been hockey teams. They were there.
But in those days, those teams were in the WCHA.
With Denver and with. Denver and Minnesota, Duluth, and I think St. Louis was in there, weren't they? The Billikens?
Yeah, by the way, they did have Penn State gave them 6, so that gave them their automatic bid, and then they added Notre Dame.
Okay. So, all right. So
Notre Dame was in Hockey East, and they were just looking, probably to cut back on travel expenses a lot. But the other thing was that they had stopped filling the stadium once the new wore off. It's a really nice arena. And so once that kind of wore off on them, they needed the rivalries. They wanted to have, it was much better to have Michigan, Michigan State, Wisconsin coming to town than it was to have Massachusetts, Lowell, and schools like that. You'd get Boston College, which would give them a good game, and you'd get a few others. But for the most part, Hockey East, while a really good conference, didn't have any interesting matchups for a Midwestern team.
Well, I was looking through. I know I kind of jumped everybody when I was talking about the Big Ten and they're moving to conferences. And you know, if you talk to people in the sports guys, the real manly men sports guys that Greg and I hang with. It's always, what do you mean? Hey, Chief, it's $20 million, for on TV. You got to go there. And I said, do you guys have any idea that the budget of like UCLA is $11.5 billion? Well, I actually dug through. I've got Wisconsin and Illinois pushing $8 billion. Kevin, I mean, these schools are massive places.
Yet you have a school like North Carolina, where the Board of Trustees has taken up the issue of whether North Carolina should try and join some lawsuits to get out of the ACC because they can go where there's more money in the SEC.
Somehow
it has high level interest.
It does.
And as I said this on Monday, and I'll repeat it, because I think there's more money in this than anybody lets on.
Well, there's the incredible thought that. And I'm sure that you can prove anything with statistics, Kevin. You're always talking about that. I'm sure you could find that if your team wins a national championship or something, and the next year everybody wants tickets or some crap, you could see a bulge in contributions once in a while because of the athletics. And I'm guessing if you win a national championship, you probably get a little bit of a bulge. But people have taken that to the idea that if you were to dump the football team, like, nobody would ever contribute again, which is so far off base, I don't want to go there. So there's this aura around it. I think a lot of it is male hormonal, although maybe it's going to be female hormonal now too, that somehow or another this is really, really good for the place. They have this championship team and throw all this money at it. And I don't know where... I liked the idea when I was in school that you and I could walk over and see a really nice basketball game or obviously a really good football game. But did it define our existence? No. Our paper still had to be done on Monday, didn't it? Whether we went to the game or not and whether we got drunk afterward or not. So, there's... I think it's kind of overblown, and some of it I think is overblown because...
You guys are missing the point of college again.
What is the point of college?
For students, it's drinking, and for adults, it's tax write-offs and or sports.
Well, okay, but what I'm saying is the...
You forgot the sex part.
But the Notre Dame... The Notre Dame basketball does
not
fill up. Notre Dame's
a big hedge fund now.
Well, I get that, but they don't have anywhere near as many students at the basketball games as when we were there.
You don't need students to support the hedge fund.
I'm trying to make the distinction between education and otherwise.
It's not about education.
Well, there's an awful lot of colleges where it is.
I don't think so.
The University of Chicago is not a college. Vanderbilt's not a college.
Chicago is a bigger hedge fund than Notre Dame.
The Ivy League is not a college.
No, these are giant hedge funds.
Oh, okay, what's that? You switch topics. I'm talking about there are an incredible amount of universities that don't have to throw money at their baseball team. Is my point. And where's this going, Kevin? Is what I'm talking about. The guys on ESPN, of course, that's their livelihood. So they're going to say one thing, that now it's all about portal and recruiting for next year. Hey, guys, it's a university.
The students without the athletics have. Or those are the hedge fund ones, and the students with the athletics are the ones who need the sports in order to fund whatever they want.
Okay. Do all young people have this incredibly disjointed view of the world, Kevin, or just Greg?
Greg is a cynic.
Yes.
Am I wrong, though?
A whole lot of them do, because I teach some of them.
Am I wrong, though?
I don't know. I think you've got some accuracy in there. Sorry, guys, I busted.
No, but
I'm glad you did, Russell, because I have to. I'm at the doctor's office now, and I have to go on in. So, thank you for being here, Russell. I'm gonna hand you the baton.
No, give me 15 seconds. I unfortunately, Kevin, I have to fact check you. In the Big Ten, not all the baseball teams go to the tournament. But 15 of 16 schools do have baseball teams. Northwestern was 4-20 in the conference this year.
That's interesting.
Wisconsin's the only one without a team.
Wisconsin does not have a baseball team? Wow.
No, they're the one that there's 15 of the 16 schools have a baseball team. Wisconsin's the only one that. And what I did was I looked at the standings on the Big Ten instead of the tournament because I knew that. I knew there were.
Yeah,
teams
no,
that
that's
didn't
where
get
that's where I am, Russell. That's where I am, Russell, and it may just be that I'm not scrolling properly on my phone.
Yeah, you named all the teams except for the really bad ones, which were Northwestern, Rutgers, Maryland, Michigan State, and Minnesota. So that's all. I'm sorry, but
I see them. If I shrink the screen, I see them. Okay. All right. Yeah. Cool.
So all right.
I'll see you guys. I'll see you. Talk to you all on Friday.
We'll overlap again in 6 months. See you.
Well, Russell, where do you think, when the Irish did it years ago, now, of course, they spent more money. They did it years ago. They put up, they called it the Taj Mahals, right, when Lou Holtz was hired. And that's what's so kind of weird about this. And actually, I was using your name the other day regarding the stuff about, does a stock split make the price of the stock go up? And I was saying at the University of Chicago's research way back, they couldn't really do any research because there was never that they could identify one day where a CEO came out and said, we're splitting the stock 2-for-1 and turned around and walked off the stage. They always said a bunch of other stuff, like we're increasing the dividend or, by the way, our income was up. There was so much more in the message that you couldn't isolate the stock split as being the negative or positive going forward. I was going to ask you to comment on that if you think that's still sort of the same thing, but the other isn't in these when they did the Taj Mahals. When I heard Lou Holtz, it wasn't just giving him some money. It was a rededication for football. And part of that was they built this massive building for indoor practice facilities. And in the thing, even today, if you went in there and you had somebody working the nets, it's pretty fascinating. You could take half the field and throw a net down the middle, and a net over the would come across the top and protect all the lights. So you could have baseball batting practice in half while the football team was in the other. Or then the tennis guys could be in another place. Now they all got their own spots, right? But it was really pretty interesting that the baseball team essentially had an indoor practice facility for the first time ever. And, you know, for a northern team, I mean, for Minnesota to decide, you know, or Wisconsin, we want a team, it's not just, you know, playing at a local park ballpark. You know, it's a massive investment for probably an indoor practice facility and all those other things, which means you have to have the land, you have to have transport, you know. It's how does something like that even go down? How would that even get started? I mean, at the board level of a university, not that you're on the board, and I don't want you talking about your place, but how does that even get started? I mean, would that come from some alumni? And there'd be a budgetary thing. There'd be how would you work it up the chain?
You'd fundraise for it. I've seen schools that have gone through this process, and I read an article. This is another reason I jumped on early, because you guys were talking about the college baseball thing, and you know, I'm from the Southeast, so I grew up right in the middle of SEC country, so I have a little bit different perspective on the type of schools that are really much more of your third generation to go drink beer and be in the same fraternity and meet your wife. Which is what I think of when I think of the big Southern state schools. We used to joke that a lot of girls would, young ladies would go to college to get their MRS degrees. They were just there. And of course, this is 30, 40 years ago. Not, things are different.
One of Audrey's friends.
Now, but there were a lot of
the lady who was on a.
But where I'm going with this is.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Did we lose you?
Oh, I thought you were trying to say. No, I'm right here. But all I was trying to say was there was an article about, because Texas A&M made the finals as an SEC team. They went out and fundraised, and most of the SEC schools have AAA equivalent baseball stadiums, is where I'm trying to go with it. And it's donors. It's donors that have that they do a specific fundraising to, you know, build these sorts of things up. Memphis is doing one right now to try to fix their stadium that's a year older than I am. But that's generally how you go about if you want to do something with respect to expanding, you know, a stadium, etc. A big portion of that's going to come from specific donations around that. And then when you get the nicer stadium, people are going to show up, and you're going to be able to charge them a lifetime, you know, seat fee for their seat, etc. So that's typically how those types of things work.
Well, years ago, my bro was I think he was working for GATX. I don't know if they were recruiting at Texas A&M or doing something. He goes, you wouldn't believe the baseball stadium these guys have. It's like 50.
Yeah.
He was like 15, 20.
Oh, yeah.
It looks like Wrigley Field, only smaller.
I lived close to the one at Georgia Tech in Atlanta, and so I know exactly what you're talking about. But yeah, it's like Kevin said. What he said with respect to being a northern school and being good at baseball, that's very difficult. Did you know that there is an indoor baseball practice facility within walking distance of you now?
Of me?
UIC
has one. Yeah, that's right.
They have. My daughter used to swim there, and it's in the same building that the pool's in.
Wow. Well, those guys are trying to be. Well, they bought the law school, right? Didn't they buy John Marshall or Ken or one of those places?
Yeah, that became part of UIC is a top 100 academic institution. People don't even realize that.
What's the I don't want you to talk about, but like the University of Indiana, you guys have some satellite it seems to me that Indiana's closer with their satellites than Champaign is with Chicago.
That is like If you live on a block and you have a couple that absolutely hates each other and they're childless, and then you have, you know, the nice big warm family with eight kids, the warm family with eight kids is IU. Champagne, you know, do you know Illinois has that alumni center over there on Wacker?
Yeah.
And I've only heard this secondhand, but I've heard one of the reasons they have it is that UIC won't let them use facilities for things that they want to do in Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, from what Kevin, I heard it from Kevin.
There's not a good relationship between those two schools. But I technically teach a class for every single Indiana campus now because they recorded a whole personal finance thing for undergrads that's me.
That's what Kevin was saying. That
students can take
because a lot of his people go to.
And then what I'm making a push, and I've got to talk to Kevin about this at some point. I'm making a real push for us to get more intertwined with Ivy Tech.
Well, he always says that IU South Bend is way closer to Bloomington than Champaign is the UIC.
I speak at IU South Bend once a year. I go around and speak at all of the satellite campuses about we do a thing about the Indiana economy, the global economy, and the financial markets next year. And we go we speak to the business school students and then anybody in the community that wants to come in and hear. We are much closer. I mean, one of the guy that was sitting right next to me at the one at South End was one of our professors in Bloomington.
Well, I thought it was kind of weird that there wasn't essentially a satellite law school at UIC. Why would they have to buy another place? But I guess they just don't get along or get along
well,
as
well. That and you know UIC is only about 50 years old.
Oh yeah, well it used to be.
I know exactly what it used to be. So you say it, but I know.
No, but it used to be a Navy pier, wouldn't it?
Yep, and it was for military mostly.
Yeah, and then it was they condemned the neighborhood and eventually tore down what used to be Maxwell Street area, and just got that was an old poor Italian neighborhood that had turned somewhat, and they just kept expanding. Matter of fact, if you watch the show Hill Street Blues. Where they pull out of the station house and all the streets over there are just, you know, they're kind of empty. That station house is now the security building for UIC. And it's totally built up. I went over to one of the restaurants I go to on Taylor Street. And I'm driving by, I go, God, that building looks familiar. And I go, that's the Hill Street Blues building. But it's all built up with dorms and ball fields and everything around there now. Yeah. Watch an old show of Hill Street Blues. You'll see guys piling out of there and the streets are nothing but kind of hookers running around and used car places and horrible spots. That's what that place was 40 years ago, 50 years ago.
And my understanding is if you really, you know, if you wanted to, you know, name the school after, you know, who's really responsible for getting that school where it is. My understanding is the Daly family made a big push around that one.
I think they did too. Yeah.
Well, they were like, you know, we don't have a major state university in our, you know, in our city and made the big push to create UIC they've got an interesting legacy, but I think that's a positive part of their legacy.
Well, they had a lot of, there's gotta be, four junior colleges downtown. There's one by Ford City. There's one out east. There's got to be one up north. There's at least four, maybe five, junior colleges. And I think Daly wanted the place where they could.
He did. No,
go.
I think he pushed like Harold Washington and those types of schools.
Yeah.
No, they were a big proponent of doing things like that.
Well, Harold Washington used to be Loop, the one down south. Mm-hmm. That when I was in high school, we had a couple courses from. I think it was it Fenger Junior College is now Olive Harvey, and the one down at Ford City is now Richard J. Daly College, and I think there's a couple up north or one west. So there's a I'm going to say five of them, and people had nowhere to pile into. I mean, at University of Chicago, we had DePaul, Loyola, but mostly there wasn't really I'll use the term public school here except for UIC. I mean,
they looked around like, what do we not have? And that's one of the things that we don't have. If my youngest is 97.8% going to University of Oklahoma for the weather thing. But if she came to me and said she wanted to, you know, she wanted to stay close to home, I would push her to UIC as quickly as I'd push her to Loyola and DePaul.
Well, what if she was the all-state tackle here that was all set to go to Ohio State and he got the big money from Miami and left the same minute? What if she got paid to go to DePaul?
You know, if she got the big money from Miami, I would, and I love Indiana, and if anybody I work with is listening, don't take this seriously. I'm joking, I promise. But if they were going to send, you know, if they were going to give my my daughter, who would be the first female linebacker or whatever, a scholarship, I would say that you're also going to have to bring her dad down there to be a professor.
Oh, God, she doesn't.
Miami is a really good school.
She's way too attractive and smart to be a linebacker.
She is. That's true.
Plus, you know, when she wants to be, for those that don't know, Russell's lovely daughter, he's got two, but the one is wants to be a serious meteorologist. I mean, somebody who does work for like NOAA or places like that. Where are the top schools? I know that Valpo has one, but.
Oklahoma is the top school. And the reason, and it's the top school for what she wants to do, and what she wants to do is study tornadoes, and the National Weather Service's headquarters, where they basically coordinate all of the tornado warnings, etc., is right in the middle of it's right on the edge of campus at Oklahoma, and she would take a big portion of her classes there. They even, you know, the movie Twister, they didn't endorse it. Because they don't really endorse going around and chasing tornadoes, unless you really know what you're doing. They have some of the props and everything in the lobby of the school. You should be talking to her instead of me on this one. There are National Weather Service affiliated universities, and pretty much she's limited to the list of those. Like Indiana is not one. Indiana's type of science is with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association, with NOAA.
That's where one of my buddies, my roommate from college, worked there for 30 years, just retired from there.
And I believe that the grant that we got, that Indiana got from NOAA a couple of years ago that's going to run a decade, I think it's about the same amount of money that the athletic department brings in.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying.
In my mind, that's the big difference between the Big Ten and the SEC, is the Big Ten is also doing some really great academic work. All Big Ten schools, with the exception of Nebraska, are in the top tier of research universities. And with the next week, with the addition of Texas and Oklahoma, I think only four of the SEC schools are at that level.
Well, you mentioned the one of the ladies, let's say a family member of one of the ladies who's been on the show, terrific young lady. She went to Alabama, joined the sorority, and the sorority started sending her letters about, here's where we buy our makeup.
Yeah.
Totally different world than one sister's blue jeans and sweatshirts, and the other one, the first football game, everybody's got the high heels, the dresses made up, and I
grew up down there.
Well, you know, her aunt went to Notre Dame, where you went in, you know, the Notre Dame t-shirt and the blue jeans. She goes, you're going like that to a football game? Well, yeah. Anyway, that was an interesting conversation, I'm sure. But it's somewhat different. I mean, that's my theme here, Russell. You know, I love sports, but this whole idea is we start walking up the money. I'm just trying to keep people somewhat in perspective to what universities do and what their budgets are and all the stuff they've got going. They got hospitals, they got grants like you're talking about. Hey, I got to believe that the weather part is a minor in some overriding science school. What science school is it in?
Oh gosh, now you're sorry. I mean I'd have to look it up. When you start to get into things like that outside of business schools, I get lost very quickly.
Well, my buddy was my roomie at Notre Dame. He was in. He ended up being I think he has a degree in chemistry. Brilliant guy. And he went to Ohio State for a few years for his master's degree. And he finally, he's there for like 3 years. And, you know, it's one of those, you know the deal better than I do. But they'd give him some money to stay, get a fellowship or something. He gets something, not a fellowship. What do you give the guys? Fellowships for somebody higher. If you're a teacher's aide / student / teacher, teacher something, what do you call those guys? You get some money. Then you hang.
They're your TA, and they get a stipend.
And what they
call it's going to vary from school to school.
So he, after like 3 years, he says to these guys, "Hey, when the hell do I graduate?" And they go, "You want to leave? We all just love this life. get a place to stay, teach some classes, have a few beers at night, and learn as you go." He ended up getting his PhD from University of Rhode Island. And then he ends up getting hired by NOAA, but he had a fascinating career there. Remember the ozone holes? We were worried about the ozone.
Yeah, where they would measure. Yeah.
He was in the DC-8 flying over the ozone holes or under the ozone holes, and then after that they did a worldwide study on oxygen versus CO2 production, and he was telling me they found amazing differences in what people necessarily think, and he was saying like if you talk to everybody they'll say, oh man, the Amazon, it's a huge producer of oxygen because it's all plants, right? He goes, that's totally he says, it's totally untrue. He says, for every thing like that essentially goes to equilibrium to where you've got plants producing huge amounts of oxygen, you get all the dead plants and 90 bazillion termites and everything else eating all the stuff, kicking off carbon dioxide.
At Oklahoma, it's called the College of Atmospheric and Geographic Sciences.
Wow.
That sounds about it. Yeah, usually we always, when we're looking at different schools, we always type in atmospheric sciences.
There you go.
And atmospheric sciences will fall under, at some other schools, it will fall, within a science department. Or
meteorology
like that,
is the, yeah. is the, I guess, the school that's, yeah. that's it's a, that it, falls it, under it, atmospheric and geographic sciences.
Well, that sounds cool.
Yeah, it sounds like you're in a real, it sounds really smart, doesn't it?
Anyway, Russell,
speaking of, just real quick, I got to give her major kudos on the radio. Over a couple of days ago, they had a couple of tornadoes up at Lake Geneva.
Yeah.
My in-laws have a house up there, and my daughter called them and said, in about an hour, you guys need to get in the basement.
Really?
Yeah. She's got all these really great, the storm chasers have great apps where, if they've got, they can look and they go, okay, we got an hour and a half to get to that place because that's where one's most likely to happen. But she told them, and then about an hour later, lo and behold, they look out and they can see one on the lake, and they're all in the basement.
Are they using the U.S. Weather Service that you and I can use?
I assume they're using data that fills into that, but she has 5 weather apps on her phone.
Wow.
That are that I pay for, that are much higher end than what you and I look at.
But they must be coming from government somehow. They're the only ones that do it, right?
They get the data from different centers and coordinate it. I know, like College of DuPage out here in the western suburbs, they're one of the contributors. College of DuPage is a really good meteorology school as well.
Really?
Yeah, they it's one of the areas that they're really known for.
Is that four years or two? Is that four? Two.
Two. Yeah.
So you do that, and then you go out of there, and then where you go?
You could go finish up at Oklahoma or somewhere else.
Really?
Yeah.
What?
We have students at IU that started Ivy Tech.
Okay.
And that's why I think we need to coordinate the relationship a bit more, because I without getting too much in the weeds on it, I'd like to court, because I have former Ivy Tech students, and I'd like it if we coordinated what they do in their early years in the business school before they come to us.
I think that there's a huge
experience for them.
From what Kevin says, there's a huge push for that on his end as well, where it's more seamless in there.
I put in for a grant to study that, and I'm waiting to hear back.
Well, didn't also Tammy Shanahan used to say that College of DuPage, it's really hard to get into University of Illinois engineering school. Doesn't College of DuPage have an engineering program that takes like the exact same classes, the exact same books, so if anybody falls out of the one in Illinois, they got a guy to replace them, or a lady?
That I would not be the least bit surprised if that's true.
I mean, then you're only paying for 2 years instead of Well, you're paying something in junior college.
Dude, I paid my way through college, and I went to Memphis State. And God, I wish somebody had told me that I could have gone to the local junior college for a couple of years first.
Yeah. Hey.
Just to save some money.
You haven't been on Tuesday and Friday, but our producer on Tuesday and Friday, Ricardo, he's going to one of the junior colleges up on the north side. I think it's in Chicago. I don't know the name of it. But he said they are trying to – it might not be in Chicago because it's being very progressive with this. He says that they are now contracting with DePaul, Northwestern, and Loyola. They have essentially visiting professors where they can become a four-year place and get a four-year degree in a couple of areas without having to pay those other tuitions. So he plans plans on whatever degree he was telling me about, being able to stay like right there at junior college prices and get his four-year degree. Is that happening anywhere? I mean, Kevin said some of that, there's thought afoot of that at Ivy, but I don't think it's going anywhere yet.
Mm-hmm. Ivy, I would... You know, the system is so fragmented in Illinois versus Indiana. You know, we have a ton of Ivy Techs and we have a ton of IU campuses and we have a handful of Purdue campuses as well. So you get, and we all work together very nicely. Whereas you don't have quite the same thing in Illinois. We just said even UIC and University of Illinois don't work together quite well. Loyola, and I can't remember the name of the school, but Loyola bought a junior college, a two-year school, and put them in the old business building over near Chicago and State.
Really?
And I feel like they focus in on the Catholic community within Chicago, and if you do well at that school, you can finish up at Loyola.
Well,
it's a way to give.
They are Jesuits,
really,
after all.
It's a way to offer an opportunity to students that may not have had the ability to go to Loyola just for financial reasons more than anything else.
Are Jesuits really Catholic?
Sorta.
Yeah. Yes, I think they are. But I'm sure at some point during the centuries, people have asked that question.
I went to a De La Salle school, and when the De La Salle brother was hitting me upside the head with a book, you know, I questioned whether they were really Christian or not.
Yeah, but you look how well you turned out.
Oh, good God. Yeah, I turned out okay.
Yeah, you turned out fine. What?
Still got a little ringing in my left ear from Brother Adrian smacking me a couple times.
Well, the nuns were pretty good with the erasers. They could nail you in the back of the class right in the head.
Oh, yeah.
But erasers weren't very hard. That was okay. No. What the?
Yeah, that's maybe if we re-implemented that for a decade or so, we'd see if it has a different impact on our youth.
Well, in order to have that, you have to be able to call parents at home and somebody pick up the phone. That helps out. They derive their power from the parents. If the parents don't care, I don't think any teacher can, unless it's a really private, pay to get in kind of place, and there aren't many of those around. Hey, before you ran, I was talking seemingly to me, and I know you keep your eyeballs on this when you're studying and when you're researching this stuff. Why does it seem now in the last few weeks? Now, you know, the markets are random. Stuff happens for a while, then it doesn't happen for a while. It seems like every stock after earnings, even if the earnings are crummy, are being repriced 15-18% to the upside. Is this? Are we just all getting we're cheering along with the NVIDIA, the new valuations? I'm not saying they're bad or whatever. I'm just saying they're somewhat unprecedented in my years here. That all of a sudden now, you know, 12 times revenue, 15 times revenue is okay even for a stock that's been around for 50 years. I mean, is that our new benchmark? And it's not, you know, 6 or 7 like it was a while ago. I mean, everybody now is.
You know, There are a lot of, and I've worked with people like this in the past. There are a lot of managers that when you get within 2 or 3 weeks of an earnings announcement, if they're looking at a stock and liking it, they may want to hold off. I even had a PM say to me once when I was just an execution trader, no, I don't want to buy any more of you know, XYZ. You know, I don't want to look stupid if the earnings are really bad in a couple of weeks. So I feel like if you've got, if the risk of earnings gets behind you and everything is sort of okay, like with FedEx, things are sort of okay with FedEx.
Well, revenue's down on the year. Is it a
yeah, no, revenues are down, and it's not going to get any better because they lost a massive contract that kicks in September. They used to handle a whole bunch of the Postal Service traffic, and UPS has taken that over. They lost the contract on that one, so which is low margin business, but it's still, you know, stuff that you get to put in planes and move around and get paid for. So FedEx, you know, the longer FedEx has got some hurdles in front of them already, but I feel like when we've got a whole lot of liquidity floating around the financial system, which we do, that it's got to find a home, kind of like, you know, water when your basement floods. Water's going to find a way to get wherever it's going to get.
Oh yeah.
So I feel like there's a lot of liquidity. You know, the performance of the overall market really has been concentrated in a handful of sectors and a handful of stocks. So if you're looking around for where to put new money to work, if you've got, you know, a stock that has underperformed tremendously over the last, you know, 2-3 years, and when and still performed okay, just underperformed what the market's been doing, and you get a little bit of good news, you're like, well, that's a safe place to put money. So I feel like there's you know, and this is going to sound completely counterintuitive and something that you know, maybe the boy needs his coffee before he goes on the radio, but you've got, you know, these stocks that have underperformed, ridiculously outperforming stock, you know, stocks like NVIDIA, et cetera. So you kind of feel okay putting the money to work in them, even if they're at all-time high valuation.
Well,
and you got to put the money somewhere.
It's just unusual to me that we're talking about a stack, you know, that really can't get out of its own way. I mean, UPS, I have a lot of UPS stock for clients, and it's been, let's play with the one.
Oh, I know. I only own two stocks, and UPS is one of them.
Well, one of my
the other one is Hawaii Electric.
Well, one of the people that I have as a client, she retired from there, and we're protecting the stock. You know, we're buying some puts and doing some stuff. When we got the stock, it was 208. It's now 137. That's like 3 years. So, but I mean, there's a few things here that as you being a market guy, I'm really suspicious when the straddle is what I think a pretty lofty 19.5 and the stock's up 38. I mean, the market is that, especially when the news, like, okay, they're doing good on their cost cutting, they claim, but it's not showing up in any of the revenue or earnings. Is that just this thing now we have after the close where we put all these, which we've done for like a long time now, this stuff trading after these? Is there just no market that it gets jammed up that much and people get caught, and now here it is? But then again, they don't go back down. I was watching, Intuit is, and I don't take this as any kind of a, they were up a bunch, and they were like 11, 12 times revenue. They're a tax firm, for God's sake. How can they double? You know, I mean, Oracle. Yeah. Oracle's been, you know, it took how many years to get the price it had back in 2000? It's up 20-25%. What are they doing different all of a sudden? I mean, these guys, they can't all be doing this well because the economy isn't going anywhere.
No, it's more about in the point I fumbled on it, but the point I was trying to finish up with was I think this is the kind of stuff that you see at market tops where, you know, people are holding their nose and piling into stuff because they've had too much cash, or, you know, they've been reluctant to buy in because of the state of the world. And you got to admit, you know, if you came out of a coma and somebody said, okay, I'm not going to tell you where the stock market is for a week, you know, get caught up on all the news in the world, you sure wouldn't think that we're pushing all-time highs over and over again. But, you know, where else are you going to invest? And I feel like when we reach the where else are you going to invest, it mindset, that maybe we're looking at some sort of a market top.
I was doing some. We've had frothy markets before, certainly in early '87 when all everybody did was want to sell puts because all we did was go up every day. Clearly in 2000, you know, we had issues, but we've had issues all along the way. But you know, it's the thing. And I don't, maybe you can, as the professor. I don't think I mentioned this to you. If I have, just, you know, throw an eraser at me through the line. The closest thing I can come to this mentality, Russell, is the flip side of when I first started in 1980, mm-hmm. where everybody, even people that should have been in some stock, what I'm saying this is when somebody comes in, and you know, I do this for a living, so I kind of know what I'm talking about. When somebody comes in, you're almost like a doctor, in a sense. A good general practitioner, that's even a thing people do anymore, used to tell me that you don't even have to tell me how you feel. I look at your eyes, I see your face, I see your coloring, I see you walk, I see you sit down, I can tell you how you feel. Mm-hmm. And so when somebody talks about their portfolio and tells you about their station in life and are they working, what their expenses are, what the draw they need every year to live on, and how much they have, is any of it in a stock they can't get rid of for tax reasons or whatever, you could pretty much, their portfolio is already dancing in your mind, right? I mean, I've been doing this mm-hmm. so long. But when you have a situation like the last 5 years, you really have a problem pushing somebody into fixed income if they're 85 when there is no fixed income, right?
I mean, yeah, when you can't get, I mean...
You give me I can't recommend a half a percent.
The whole idea is, you know, you hit retirement, you put everything in a cash-producing instrument like a bond and live off of that interest. That becomes very difficult when there ain't no interest.
Yeah, and I mean, you had people on TV. I remember Joe Kiernan one day. I mean, I'm not about to shoot the TV, but plus I don't have a gun, so it's pretty hard to shoot the TV. Joe Kiernan said, well, the Fed is telling you no matter what your age, you need to go out further on the risk curve. And I'm going, Joe, that's fine for a TV commentator. It's not so good for a money manager to say, okay, you're 85, but by the way, we got to go in high tech because you're not making money anywhere else, and that's what I'm putting you in. I mean, it's really hard to do that. But as time goes by, I mean, and I see portfolios, people still call me, you know, and maybe want to move their account over or something, and I see it, and I go, my God, the guy's 90% stocks he heard about on CNBC, and the guy's 82, you know? But you know what? It reminds me so much of the flip side of 1980, because I didn't know anybody with a stock, except for me, getting out of school. You know, I had a couple, mm-hmm. because I was, you know, I was always happy about my grandfather at least inventing stocks. But anyway, you could not talk to anybody making 15% at the local bank into putting money in a stock. I mean, it was
right. Why should you?
You know? But the weird part there that I didn't realize until lately, Russell, and this might want to use this in a class. CD rates got to 16.5. I'm going to say early 81, maybe late 80. And they already were down to 12.5 by August of 82 when the rally started. So it really was 18 months to 20 to 24 months. Rates had already been coming down before the market made any sort of move. And if you were at any garden party in March of 82 and said, man, you know, I think I'm going to see if I can find my mutual fund guy, if he's even still in business, and cash in my CD and put my money in the market, you'd have been laughed out. But the weird part now is interest rates have gone from like zero. And the weird part, the even weirder part, I've said that three times now, between 1981 August and 1982 August, when these rates were actually coming down, Russell, the market had a 20% decline. Now, flip forward to today. The rates have gone from zero or 0.25% to 5-something on your T-bills. Still not 14 or anything like that. The market has actually gone up, not down. Even though you'll hear people bleating like a goat all day long on CNBC, but God, if the Fed would just cut rates, this market could really take off. The market already took off. It's already up to 20%. So
the rate cuts in the market. Go ahead.
Oh, well, okay. But I'm saying whatever it is, it's the exact mirror image. You can't talk people into saying, well, you know, you actually can make 5.5% now, and this stock is so damn high. You want to sell like 10% of it or 15 or something? The answer is no. Because right now, everybody, you've made your money in the stock for the last 5 years, just like in 1980, you made your money in the savings and loan for the fast five, and you're not going to change. Nobody even wants to hear that conversation. But clearly, if you would have taken your money out of a CD in June of 82 and put it in the market, God, how well have you done for 40 years, for God's sake? And I'm not saying, I just don't know how these stocks can go much higher at these valuations, unless the Fed keeps pumping money in, which causes all kinds of other problems.
Yeah, it's that, it's the whole market can remain, irrational longer than you can remain solvent, et cetera. And we really are experiencing one of those right now.
All right, S&P futures down 7, NASDAQ futures down 12. Be right back.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, no bank stocks and jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Rick Pappas on the board. SP Futures down 7. NASDAQ Futures now down 12. We just ducked down here in the NASDAQ. We were up 12 or 20 when we came in, but nothing crazy. Dow down 82. We've got, trying to get the other guys here. There we are, over in Europe. We had I'm going to ask Russell, if I don't forget, what about this French thing? The DAX down 70.4%, FTSE down 27.3%, CAC around down 74. That's a full 1%. So they've hit session lows since the last hour. I'm not sure exactly what's going on there, but that's probably what's dragging us down here a little bit, I would think. Over in Asia, Nikkei up 493, 1.2%, 39,667. Back up almost at 40,000 level again. Hang Seng up 17 to 18,089, still hanging over 18. Shanghai, another question for Russell. They're down 22, 29.72. Mainland China's not doing anywhere near as well as Japan or these other places. Yesterday, mixed bag, Dow was down 299. S&P up 21, NASDAQ up 220. NASDAQ made back, it's almost like a Fibonacci. Got back maybe two-thirds of what they were down the day before, maybe a little more, actually. Bonds up 5 basis points now, 2.29. The Bund up 2 basis points, 2.44. Japan up 4 to 104, which is a pretty big move for those guys. Oil up 57 cents, 81.40. Brent up 46 cents, 85.47. Natural gas down 7 cents, 268. Arbab up a penny, 252. Gold down only down $3 now. It was down more earlier to 23.27. Silver up 16 cents, 29.03. Copper unchanged for up 438. Boy, I got a whole kinds of lists here for Russell there, for God's sake. Hope he's ready. Euro, dollar's actually a little stronger. The euro's down to 106.8, the lowest we've seen in a while. The pound, too, is under 127, 126.5. Crypto, Bitcoin's down 579, 61,354. What about traffic, weather, sports, and what about our Cubs and Sox?
Morning, everyone. 7:36 here in Chicago, 75 degrees. Scattered thunderstorms this morning. High of 81 today. Also a beach hazard warning, 3 to 6 foot waves in the lake, so be careful. And
you know, that was a title of a Beach Boys album, Don't Go Near the Water.
Yeah, little bit of problems for swimmers today. Phoenix, 83 degrees right now, mostly cloudy and hot there with a high of 111 today. Traffic, inbound Kennedy from Montrose, 46 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lake Cook, 63 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf, 39 minutes. And the Ryan from 95th is 24 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Ryan is 40 minutes. In baseball, we got the Diamondbacks winning at home. That was against the Twins. That was 5-4. White Sox lose to the Dodgers at home, 4-3. And the Cubs lose in San Francisco, 1-5. That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
All those questions for you, Russell. Which order would you like to take them? We've got the Japanese yen thing. We've got the China thing. They're supposed to be putting money in to pump their market up and work for a little while. And we've got, what in God's name is going on in France? It was a big news a couple of weeks ago. Now it's all forgotten. What's that all about? Which one would you like to do first?
The thing with France, I mean, that was an overreaction to a different party taking over. I almost equate that one to the night that Trump got elected, where the S&P futures were limit down and then turned around and rebounded right back up. So I think that's basically what happened over there. Was they had a surprise with respect to an election. They decided to call a snap election. And I was on a podcast, and my quote was, it was the end of the world for about 30 minutes over there, and then everything just went right back to normal.
Well, did he dump the parliament or not?
I thought they called a snap election, but they haven't had it.
They haven't had it yet, okay.
Yeah, so it's more of, well, you know, maybe things aren't going to, you know, it's not going to be the end of the world if the more conservative guys take over. So that the whole European thing was just a silly overreaction to, you know, the other guys are going to take over. But, you know, the thing with respect to the, you know, whether it's the conservative or the liberal side, you know, running the government in a lot of developed countries, they're still working within a system, and they can try really hard, but it's going to be pretty tough for them to break that system. And I had a really smart guy within the financial markets that explained reactions to government type things like that to me. Like 40 years ago, I think he actually was explaining to me when Bill Clinton got elected that just because he's more liberal, you know, it's not going to completely screw up the business, you know, the business of doing business.
I wonder if Milton Friedman used to say stuff that if he were to look at today's world, I think he would think just the opposite on things. But if in the world of executive orders, if you had that conversation with the same gentleman again, what do you think he'd say? Would he have a different view, you think, or no?
No, I think he would still realize that at a very high end, the system is so strong that we're going to be, in the long term, we're going to be okay. As long as
long-term,
the system doesn't completely fall apart.
In the long term, we're all dead.
Well, yeah, I know, but I mean, I'm thinking long term beyond a couple of weeks.
Well, this is kind of a political. Kind of,
everybody's very short-sighted about everything.
Well, it's sort of a political question. What do you make of? And I don't. Maybe you do disagree, but just about everybody who's on the show and everybody, if they were to point one finger at differences in government in the last, I'm going to say 30 years, it seems like Congress has somehow, because of their infighting, has sort of abdicated their role in a lot of ways to a lot of people. I mean, I'm asking your opinion. I'm not
well,
legal witness.
It's impossible to get it. They're so split, and they're just it goes to a point where, you know, if there's something that looks like it's really good that's going to come out of Congress, they basically, if it's going to make one side look good and the other side not look good, for instance, if Congress passes something and Biden signs it right now and it's going to make Biden look kind of good, the Republicans aren't going to push for whatever it is.
Right.
So I mean, you're not able to get anything done, though, because it's all about credit right now, especially in the selection year. So yeah. You're not going to get anything. If you want to get anything done, it's going to be one guy making it, you know, here's an executive order. We're going to do this. We're going to legalize pot across the country because that's going to help me with voters. That in the world of executive orders, that's the only way to get anything done right now, because there are just too many people that probably don't even civilly talk to each other in Congress or in the House and in the Senate. You know, you used to hear the story, and you've talked about this, and it's more your era than my era. But apparently, Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan, that, you know, they could have a conversation.
Oh yeah.
You know, do you think Nancy Pelosi and you know, Donald Trump could ever have a conversation?
No. No.
Yeah. So, and if you can't even have a conversation, you know, I heard a story about Reagan and how, in one of the ways that he supposedly got through to Gorbachev, which was, you know, the first time they met, he said something to the extent, if there were an alien invasion and they came, you know, and they came after the United States first, would you guys come to our defense? And Gorbachev was like, you know, yeah, I think in that case we would come. He said, all right, well, at least we got one thing we agree on now. They tried to take it from there. And I was like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I really did like that. You know, if it was really taking it down to, you know, where, and maybe that's the same sort of mentality that occurs when we have a 9/11 type event, where we've all got to rally around something and stop worrying about our petty BS, you know, what pronoun I'm being called and things like that, which, well, to certain people I'm sure is very important, but you know, the wherewithal and, you know, the our country surviving is much more important than that.
Well, you know, you mentioned that I don't think boy, I'm trying to think back what day Tip O'Neill wasn't the speaker anymore. I don't think I ever saw him. You remember when, you know, when you were on the board of the CBO, they would constantly have visiting politicians. They'd come in and have a cup of coffee and do the really good cookies that the CBO had, and you'd sit down and you give guys, I think the number was $500 you could give them, Russell. It might have been $1,000, but it was $500, I think. So it was, to me, it was very positive, democratic, you know, what we're essentially built on in this country. Guys would come in and they'd sit down and they'd learn about your business. They could ask questions. They'd tell you what they were doing on a very man-to-man, man-to-woman level. I mean, no, just sit down with some people and talk about, you know, what are options? What do you guys do? What does this building do? How many people work here? And then you'd ask them questions. And I thought it was incredibly, well, Tom Foley came, and he was right after Tip, right? And you see how the guy was elected. The guy, I mean, I was 6'4 at the time. He's bigger than me. His hands wrapped around my huge man. And he'd sit down, and he was talking about Tip O'Neill, and he goes, he would tell me that Ronald Reagan, he'd go to the White House, he goes, they disagreed on most stuff, but whatever they agreed on, he goes, you shook Ronald Reagan's hand and you had a deal. He goes, this Clinton guy, Tip used to come in back and tell me, I'd never know if I got a deal with this guy. And he's supposed to be on my side. But he also said that Tip was absolutely fearless. And he's one of these Irish guys from Boston, right? He goes, there was this group he was going to go see, and he's all these conservative guys. You know, and he says, and Tip was going to go give a speech. I go, what are you going over there for? All they're going to do is give you a crap. Yeah. He goes, I can handle it. He goes, the man, well, he'd walk into the mouth of a whale. He wouldn't care. He said, he walks over, and all these guys are giving him crap about this thing and that thing. And he goes, I know I'm with a group of you guys that are all self-made men, right? And they go, yeah. He says, you know, you walked against the wind uphill both ways to school. Nobody ever gave you a dime. Pulled yourself up by your bootstraps. Yeah. He goes, can you humor me and give me a couple of questions? He goes, how many people here went to school on the GI Bill? And like half the hands went up. He must have researched this before. And then he goes, by the way, how many people here have parents that had a surgery through Medicare that cost a lot of money that they didn't pay for and neither did you? Like another 50%. Right? Tell me again how you never got anything. You know, and he just was of that. He was of that, you know, don't punch me, I'll punch you right back kind of guy. And not in a bad way. Just, I mean, he was, you know, I don't, would I agree with everything that Tip O'Neill wanted to do? Probably not. But that's not the point, is it? Was what you're saying. You're not.
No, no.
And, you know,
it's the ability to work together or actually talk to each other.
You might find out the other guy might be right once in a while.
Yeah. Hey, I'll take it to an extreme here. You know, the encampments that where you've got the college students, you know, protesting Gaza and all that type of stuff. You know, I feel like I'm a pretty articulate guy and a pretty reasonable guy. No way on God's green earth am I going to go talk to anybody that's doing that kind of protesting and even try to get some insights from them. Because I don't feel like I'm going to be able to have anything close to a normal conversation with them.
Well, I'm going to have to.
And there are lots of topics and situations like that. We had a discussion about 5 or 6 years ago on this program about how upset a student at Loyola got with me because I was saying that companies should try to figure out, you know, they should issue more debt to lower their tax burden. Well, that's, you know, you said at the beginning of class, you said that the reason that a company's around is to increase shareholder value and do no harm. Well, avoiding paying taxes is doing harm to all of us. Oh my God. And the kid just would not. I mean, he gave me like, you know, 0 stars and ripped me on a couple of the
create.
There was no having a conversation with him.
You didn't create the tax law.
Do what?
You didn't create the tax law.
I didn't create that, but you know, the whole, you know, avoiding, you know, reducing the amount of taxes. It's like, well, you know, that's doing harm. If they're avoiding paying taxes, that's bad for the government. That's doing harm to all of us. I'm like, oh my goodness gracious.
By the way, I'll help you out for a second. If you ever
have
that conversation again, we actually had that conversation in one of the classes at the University of Chicago that I recall. And what the professor said, and the student said something almost the exact same thing. I forget who the professor was. It wasn't Friedman. It was one of the other guys. What you're really asking me is should interest on long-term debt, meaning you're financing your company with it, not short-term debt, should interest on long-term debt be deductible? And he goes, I could almost agree with you that maybe it shouldn't be. But now that it is, it's part of your running a company and maximizing, you know, not maximizing profits to the point where you're polluting the stream, but is it part of your system on how you minimize your expenses at your place? It is, but I'll agree with you. What you're really saying is, and we're not talking about short-term debt, you know, where if all of a sudden a plumbing company has to go buy a bunch of pipe for somebody and pay the plumbing supply house, that we all agree, I think, should be deductible. It's a cost of doing business for that project. But if you decide, if you decide instead of having 100% equity, you want 40% long-term debt, I could clearly make an argument that that shouldn't be deductible. I'm not saying I'm right. I'm saying you could make the argument. I don't know if what side of mine.
No, yeah. If you're, and the idea you really articulated the idea behind debt being deductible. It's, you know, Ford's building, you know, a giant F-150 electric truck plant in West Tennessee, and they issued debt to, you know, to break ground on that and hopefully get that thing up and running. So, I mean, that debt is directly associated with their cost of doing business. And they wouldn't be able to do business if they weren't able to. They wouldn't be able to build that factory if they weren't able to go out and borrow the money in the financial markets in the way that they can. But because of the way that money's, you know, the way that money's being used, I feel like I'm okay with it being deductible. If you're just issuing debt for your, you know, day-to-day running the company and not for capital investments, I could start to question whether or not that should be deductible.
What if you buy your stock back and issue debt to use the deduction?
Well,
I might agree with your student on that one.
Yeah, no, that's, you know, again, so the role of a company, which has evolved from, you know, increase shareholder value to increase shareholder value and do no harm. I personally don't think reducing your tax, the amount of taxes that you're paying as a company, I don't think that's doing harm.
I don't think it is. I'm not so sure that I would almost replace do no harm with the in the long run, because if you're going to be there in the long run, if you pollute the stream, eventually you're going to get caught, and it's going to cost you more to clean it up.
Yeah.
Hey, I can't let you go at all without, what is going on with this Japanese yen? Is it something we should be looking at, something we should be trading? What are you doing? I've got it going up to 160 to the dollar. It's getting pummeled, right, against the dollar.
Yeah.
And a part of that is their interest rates are a lot lower. They're down to,
yeah.
But even though they're going up, I've got this thing up from 155 to 160 in since the end of May. That's a huge move, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It's a big move, but I think that's it's a function of everywhere else in the world is kind of scary looking as far as investing in other parts of the world right now. And Japan is at the, if World War III breaks out, Japan is right there on the front line of this thing.
Oh yeah.
You know, in fact, I watched I watch YouTube videos on different topics I'm interested in, and I watched a whole YouTube video talking about how, you know, if Japan suddenly decides to get along with China again, or I shouldn't say again, I don't think they've ever gotten along, but one of the biggest threats to us could be if Japan doesn't stick with us as far as trying to put up a big front against China trying to impose their will on the rest of the world. So I think there's just some excess risk that's coming out of that part of the world right now, and I feel like part of it is just what's bleeding over from China into, you know, the neighboring countries, and not necessarily because, you know, Japan sources a whole lot of things out of China, etc., but just the excess risk associated with how bad things are in China right now, and that's really where the big problems are.
Well, this is
their system is a mess, and if they didn't have a giant surveillance state like they do, and the ability to control their population, I think, you know, the riots that we had during COVID, and they were riots downtown. Where,
oh, yeah.
I think an uprising in China would pale in comparison.
Well, what is this?
Absolutely pale in comparison.
Is this a legacy of long-term kind of crummy monetary policy, or is this something recent? But I've been reading stuff over there, and you wonder how the hell it's going to get on a Stocks and Jack show. They can't even... They're not having enough sex over there to have kids.
No.
I mean,
and that's not just them. That's, you know, China's demographics are screwed. Russia, without the war... in about 100 years, the way things are going, we're not going to have any more Russians.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that in the developed world. It's worse in Japan, and I think they're at the leading edge of kind of a giant demographic bust. But that's a developed world problem everywhere.
Russell, I read this,
and part of it's you mentioned two income households during about an hour ago.
Yeah.
You can't, if both partners are working, you're probably having less sex,
yeah.
But you're also probably less willing to have, you know,
a
you're
kid.
Not going to have your accidental third child.
Right. Oh, yeah.
But you're probably, you know, planning it out, want to have them in a 2 or 3 year range there together. And then if you need both people working, mom will go back to work and you'll start kind of outsourcing some of the upbringing of your kids.
I read this bizarre story. Somebody sent it to me, the reason why I read it. They evidently, Japan, again, this is not anything I've done any sampling on, but evidently they had like the best condom company in the world. And they used to basically sell them all domestically. To now the mm-hmm. point where their sales are down so much, they're term export. You got some of the stuff you read, it's like, God bless, who would even have thought of that, huh? But what does it mean to you or me as an investor to see the yen go from 152 per dollar to 160? I mean, does that mean it means that if we would invest it over in Japan, we better be up more than 4% because we're down on the currency, right?
Yep. It hurts our potential returns, and I do think that you know our stock market continues to grind higher. And it's because we're insulated more so than any other part of the world with respect to bad things that are going on in the world. You know, you bet you got a proxy war going on in, you know, in Eastern Europe. Are you aware that the Philippines and China are basically fighting over and I think they call it an atoll or something like that, that China says is in their part of the South China Sea? And
this is a real one, that one China made up.
Yeah, well, no, it's the line that China made up. They claim that the whole South China Sea is theirs.
Right.
And what the Philippines have done is they basically have a World War II boat that's rusting that they treat as being, you know, they ran it aground, and they basically have sailors on there all the time. It's how they're claiming that part of the South China Sea. And when they go to resupply these guys, the Chinese Coast Guard shows up with water cannons and tries to push the Philippine boats away. And they escalated a few days ago where the Chinese Coast Guard showed up with hammers and axes and were like, they weren't fighting, they weren't shooting at them, but they're doing everything short of having a shooting war with them over this part of the world. We've got a defense, we have an agreement with the Philippines that if they're attacked, we will come to their defense. And if we don't, if it gets to that point and we don't hold up to that agreement, God help the rest of the world.
Yeah.
I personally think that a lot of what's going on in the Middle East, et cetera, is because we had, you know, because, and you got to go back about 10 years or so, we had like, a red line in the sand. If in Syria they use any chemical weapons, we're going to intervene. They did it, and we didn't do anything. And when we say we'll do something and people cross that line and the United States doesn't do anything, I think it makes a lot of other bad actors in the world think, all right, we don't have to worry about those guys. They aren't going to talk, and they're not going to do anything.
You mentioned your buddy Dutch Reagan.
Yeah.
And I'm not disparaging that at all. I'm just saying that he essentially bled Russia down when we were in the ability to increase our military spending. And we didn't have all the other stuff that we're spending money on. We didn't have a debt level like this. We did all that stuff. Do you think it's possible, either by piece of paper or agreement or just they think it's working, that China, Russia, Iran are somewhat together in bleeding us on three fronts and trying to do the exact same thing to us that Reagan is doing? And we've got interest rates, interest income, expenses as much as our defense budget. We're paying every drug company $1,000 for stuff that costs $5. I think we have to have a president here who absolutely realizes that this is going on and acts to fix it. And I don't think we have either one of these guys has a clue of what either one of us are talking about.
I don't think they do either.
I mean, I think we're being bled on three fronts.
You know,
I honestly believe that.
I do think that both guys are a bit to blame on where we are now.
Oh, without a doubt.
I didn't realize, because I was so young at the time, I didn't realize we needed a Reagan when he came along as much as we did. We need another one. And is there anybody out there?
No, they won't even let RFK on the stage with the debate, huh?
Yeah, unfortunately, RFK, I think he would be better. I really do think he'd be better than the other two guys. But he's got his own little stuff going on as well.
I agree. I'm just saying, if you put him next to the other two in a debate, that would not be good for those two guys.
Oh no! And Joe Johnson, who was she was the Libertarian candidate 4 years ago. She would have wiped the floor with those two guys.
Who is my Libertarian candidate this year? I don't even know.
I've forgotten what that guy's name is.
I might have to vote for him, but I don't know who he is. Anyway, SP Futures.
I might vote for RFK, and the fact that
is he on the ballot
voting for a Kennedy? I would assume so.
I don't think he is. We'll have to check that. SP Futures down.
He's not on the ballot here. I know he's going to be on the ballot in a lot of places, but
SP Futures down 14. NASDAQ Futures down 40. Russell, thank you.
You betcha.
Talk to you soon. Nice job, Greg. We'll be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
I hate goodbyes.
So you gonna get another job?
I don't think I'd like another job.
What are you gonna do about money and bills and...
You know, I've never really liked paying bills. I don't think I'm gonna do that either.
That's all, folks.